Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and I'm here with attorney Leslie Barrows of the Barrows Firm in Fort Worth, Texas, serving Tarrant County and the greater DFW Metroplex in family law, criminal defense, juvenile law, and estate planning. This is the Barrows Law Firm Review, a monthly internet radio show podcast featuring information about Texas law and events that affect families and the community of attorneys and professionals who serve them. Attorney Leslie Barrows is our featured guest today as she shares insight and information about the financial issues and concerns of men, women, and families in divorce and family law cases. For more information about the Barrows Firm, you may visit barrowsfirm.com, and you can find them as well on Facebook and Twitter with the handle Attorney Barrows. Don't forget to stop by the firm's testimonials page on the website, and as well, testimonials at LinkedIn and at abo.com. Today's program is titled Financial Issues in Divorce and Family Law with a Fort Worth attorney, Leslie Barrows. Some of the bullets that we'll talk about in our program today are financial disclosures and the discovery process in divorce and family law. Then we'll talk a little bit about asset evaluations and the classifications of property as either community property or joint marital or separate and individual property. We'll talk about income issues and determinations in divorce, child support and other family law matters. And then another topic that we all love, which is tax issues in divorce. Tax time's coming up. We'll talk about filing status, how to decide on who's going to claim who is a dependent exemption with children, and, of course, negotiating any tax issues and liabilities in the divorce. And then we'll talk about updating the will and estate planning documents and insurance policies after a divorce, which is a very important thing to note. I'm here with Leslie Barrows, and she's the principal and founder of the Barrows Firm in Fort Worth, Texas. Her firm's main practice areas are family law, criminal defense, and juvenile law. Leslie's consistently challenged with dynamic cases and clients, and when winning is what matters, many in the Fort Worth area go to the Barrows Firm. But it's based on the reputation and winning track record over the past decade, which is why they go there. And Leslie Barrows earned her undergraduate degree from Sam Houston State University, and earned a law degree from Oklahoma City University School of Law. Leslie is a member of numerous organizations, primarily focused in Tarrant County. And for more information about Leslie and the firm, you can call them directly at 817-481-1583. Again, that telephone number for the Barrows Firm in downtown Fort Worth, Texas is 817-481-1583. A short disclaimer, this is a general information program. The advice shared in this show is not legal advice, and listening to our attorney guests does not give rise to an attorney-client relationship. If you do have specific questions about any of our content on today's program, don't forget to call the Barrows Firm directly at 817-481-1583. All rights to this broadcast are reserved, and it's time to say good morning to Leslie Barrows.
Morning on this cold, rainy day in Texas.
I know. We just had spring, and everyone was spring breaking, and now it's flooding and cold again. So it's a good day to sit inside and talk about money. And this time of year, I think, is a particularly good time to talk about financial issues because people have gotten over the financial blowout that usually is the holidays. People are getting tax returns, thinking of getting divorced, actually. February is one of the top months for divorce, and so these issues are all pretty common. So I guess jumping right in, what should people know about when they're contemplating for divorce, you know, getting things together for financial disclosures and the discovery process? Where do we start?
Well, usually I start with when I first meet with a client, I have them fill out a form. And you know, the common thread that I hear is, okay, you know, one spouse is the one who manages a lot of the finances. They don't, not a lot of people work as a team with with that. So there are some people that keep their bank accounts separate. Then there's others where they have everything going through the joint account. But it looks like there's always maybe one person that's in charge and has all the passwords, you know. So we have to make sure that, depending on the circumstances, that, you know, we get all the information that we need. And under the rules of the court, for the local rules in the different counties, when we go for temporary orders hearing, we have to have a financial income statement, you know, basically outline what's your monthly budget, you know, and all of that. So each party is supposed to give that information and bring tax returns and salary and, you know, pay stubs or military. You know, if they're on a lot of people that are on disability, they have to bring their Social Security information as well. And if there are children, to calculate child support. And then also it helps with if there's spousal support to be calculated, then it makes it a lot easier if we kind of do that exchange before we get to the courthouse where we're trying to crunch numbers, you know, on our iPhones. So
right, right.
Well, so we make sure that we do those financial disclosures, you know, up front.
Mm-hmm. And in the discovery process, you know, the financial disclosures first, and then there may be more detailed discovery. What would you tell someone who says, you know, because a lot of people get their information from their friend who's going through divorce, and their friend will say, oh, my goodness, I'm going through this financial disclosure, and I don't have all this information, and I have to sign the form under penalty of perjury. I don't have access. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes the spouse says, I'm sorry, I'm not giving you the keys to that account. And they think, oh, no, there's being wasting of community property and assets. So mm-hmm. what do you tell people who are, you know, for less than a better word, freaked out by the whole process?
Yeah, I mean, it can be very overwhelming, you know, because a lot of times the first thing that someone does is clear out bank accounts, even though, you know, we can always trace those assets back to prove, you know, hey, you took this much money out of the joint account, you know, and we need to get this at mediation or at final trial. But yeah, I just tell people that, you know, a lot of it's still recoverable, and that's why it is important to go through, you know, at least doing a formal inventory and appraisement so we know what, you know, the husband has or what the wife has, or if it's a same-sex couple, that, you know, whatever the spouse has in retirement, things like that. So, as far as the discovery process, it's pretty, depending on which county your case is in, you know, sometimes we do informal discovery and we just kind of say, hey, I have this, these documents, and work with the opposing counsel. But some counties are more, you know, some people are more difficult to deal with. So you actually have to go through the whole formal discovery process where it would be interrogatories and admissions and even depositions sometimes in family law cases where you have a lot of assets at stake, you know, in the community estate.
As you say, the judges need to know what is in the marital and community estate, so it's not always favorable for people to be withholding information and to have to get it the hard way. It doesn't always bode well for someone in credibility and overall in the case. Let's jump to the different classifications of what we mean when we say community property versus separate or individual property. Some folks have a variety of understanding on what property is theirs before the marriage or how things are commingled, what can they expect, because most people thinking that Texas is a community property estate, the assumption is everything's automatically 100% down the middle. And for those who have spent time in other states other than Texas where there's different rules and laws, they might be a little confused there. So what do we need to know about the classifications of property and also evaluating those property and those assets?
Well, usually the separate property is going to be anything that you inherited. So, you know, you got some money from your grandma, so, you know, that money should be in a separate account. But if you've actually given the money to your spouse or bought, you know, maybe bought something for your children or, you know, remodeled the home, I mean, that's really basically a gift back to, you know, the joint marital estate. So as far as what's separate and what's joint, everything, all community income during the marriage is, you know, is community. So, and it all is subject to being divided. So under the family code, you know, under the law, it's a just and right division. So if you're going to, so, you know, you're basically going to do 50-50, you know, 50 to the husband, 50 to the wife, if you're doing a true, you know, split of the community estate. And also sometimes we have to argue. So if, you know, there's a spouse who's not going to be really around or is going to be traveling and not really involved with the family, then we would ask that, hey, you know, the spouse who's caring for the children need to get a higher, you know, piece of the pie, because they're going to have the kids most of the time and they're going to be responsible for the upgrooming, upbringing. So it just kind of depends. And also there can be reasons that you would want to get more of the estate. So if there's family violence, then you would be asking for, you know, spousal support, and you'd be asking for, you know, more help because of the family violence, or some other reason that you would want a bigger chunk of the community estate. But we usually do the asset when we have to have the businesses. We do have to do business valuations if you're trying to divide up a you know, a business that was maintained by the spouses, and so we do have to get that done as well if we're going to go to mediation and decide, okay, well, who gets this part of the business, or what is this, you know, what is the spouse entitled to?
And what is there a general rule if, well, what if there's a, I guess, what are some of the situations in which someone's business might be not part of the marital estate? If it were wholly owned maybe by another entity, or if it were maybe owned by different family members in a family-owned business where mm-hmm. a part couldn't be severable. I mean, I just wonder what are some of the complex issues that are involved.
Well, there is going to be the presumption that it is that the assets that are accumulated during the marriage are community. And so if you have a business partnership where you have, you know, so it's a, like a pizza joint and you have all the brothers involved, then it's going to be a percentage of the partnership that, you know, whatever that part of the partnership, you know, does, I guess, bring in, then in the division of the, in the divorce decree, then we'd make sure that that language is clear of what that the other spouse gets.
Mm-hmm. And also if there is an asset in the business itself other than just that income, and that spouse may get a part of that asset as well. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Good thing to know, because I think that oftentimes people are, just as you said, some people don't have access to all the financial income information. There may be spouses who choose to tell the other spouse that, there's no way you're getting part of this or part of that. My family owned this business and built it from the ground up. And I've heard this before in some of the threats of financial sabotage from, you know, that one spouse will say they're going to do to another. So confusing and scary time for a lot of folks. We're just short of our halftime. Do you want to tell us, Leslie, about some of the events coming up and things that the Barrows Firm is involved with and things that you're involved with in the upcoming month or so?
Okay. So I know today we have our annual luncheon, so we'll be going to, or a monthly luncheon at the Family Law Courthouse, so we'll be there in Fort Worth. And then tonight we'll be at the mixer at the Tarrant County Law School, you know, meeting law students and professors and people with our Bar Association in Fort Worth. And then we have also coming up, I'll be in mediation training. So that requires about 70 hours of mediation training. So I'll be doing that this month and next month. And then Lindsay will be doing the collaborative law certification to work on some collaborative law. So she'll be doing that the end of this week. She'll be in, I think it's in Dallas. So while I'm mm-hmm. at mediation, she'll be at the collaborative law training. So that should be fun.
Wow, how fun. I mean, and it's, For people who aren't aware of some of these alternative dispute resolution models, mediation is one thing, but collaborative law, that is a whole different ball of wax than what people are used to with traditional family law and litigation. What's it? How do you find it wearing two hats?
Well, I think it makes you a better advocate because you can see kind of both sides of the fence and what's going on and try to come to a resolution instead of, because there are some cases that need to be litigated, but a lot of cases can stay out of the courthouse. I mean, if you don't have an emergency situation or, CPS involved, or you have drug abuse, or you have, something going on like along those lines, then, you need to be down at the courthouse and fighting it out, but really a lot of the cases could come through mediation, and a lot of the judges do encourage you to mediate instead of, litigate. And then the collaborative approach has been around for several years, and that brings in a lot of different professionals. So you'll bring in a financial planner, and you'll have attorneys, and you promise, both sides promise, not to litigate and to keep it out of court. So it does work if you have, spouses that were actually work together, but sometimes it can not work out. So and people don't like that part of collaborative where you have to start back from scratch with another attorney. So that was one of the downsides of the collaborative approach, is if it doesn't work, then so you really have to have the right people that you use to get a resolution in the collaborative sense. So Lindsay's
right.
going to go do that training and meet some more people that do collaborative and try to offer that to our family law clients.
Right. And I can say, too, that I've known from experience that the training involved, not only in mediation, but also in collaborative law and some of the other alternative dispute models, it's extensive. And for people to be qualified and or certified, whatever applies, it's you can't just say, well, I'm going to do collaborative law and just start doing it.
Right.
There's a lot of training that goes involved that's involved with that, and a lot of people really do focus on trying to get the divorce case or the family law case finished, as opposed to the cases that in the past it was sort of the things dragged on forever, and someone would get mad at their attorney and go and leave and hire a new attorney, and you'd hear of these cases that go on for 10 years. So a lot of folks in these alternative dispute resolution models are working real hard to, if nothing else, give a better name to family law practitioners as a community of folks who really want to help people get a resolution and help them move forward with their lives. So very exciting to hear about that. Hopping back now to financial issues, income issues and determinations in divorce, child support, and other family law matters, what are some of the income things involved when we're asking for tax returns? What are we looking at there? I mean, you touched on some of that, but just to recap.
Yeah, I'm usually, under the tax code, they're looking at the date, the date that everyone's divorced. So most people, if, you're in December and you got a divorce, well, the next year you're going to want to do individual most likely, but it's just going to depend on what recommendation the CPA is making. But we do, in order to protect our clients, we do put language in our final decrees saying that, make sure that the IRS, because a lot of people have, failed to pay the IRS, and we have to make sure that, we have the language in there to protect our clients on the IRS taxes. And then on the dependency exemption, people should understand, that if you are receiving child support, then you're the one that's going to be able to claim the children on your taxes. And only if you agree with your spouse to alternate years, you really don't need to, because that's money that, you could have in your pocket for your kids going, down the line. So I don't really like when clients do that alternating or the exchange of the alternating years, unless they have a true 50-50 possession and access order, which, it works for some people, and a lot of people, you know, a true 50-50 just for possession access just doesn't work. So we do make sure that that people do file independently and on their own after we get their final decree entered.
What happens if someone takes that dependency exemption and claims on their taxes either willfully and knowingly in a bad way, or they made a mistake in their head thinking it was theirs, or this was their year, maybe they had the kids or IRS audit, right, that too, or maybe they did have the kids and you maybe derivated a little bit from the placement schedule, and you know, there was, or you know, some spouse paid for more of something or other, and they figure, well, you know, I think I'm owed this, and all of a sudden, right, you get an audit, and it says, you know, both of y'all can't claim this. What are some things that can happen in those cases, and then how do you resolve that? Do you go back to court?
No, because it's federal law, so really the district court is not going to touch anything related to the tax deal. We do go back to court and modify if, you know, say that, you know, the other spouse was supposed to pay IRS and they didn't do their payment plan, then we have done that for people. But most of the time with, you know, the district court is the ones who we deal with in family law, and they are not going to pretty much handle the federal tax law issues. They kind of just stay away from it because they know that they don't want to touch that.
Yeah, good understanding there. And also regarding tax liabilities, let's say there's a tax liability from, you know, I don't know, like we assume that everyone files jointly and married, but that might not have been the case, or one person might have tax debt from prior to the marriage. We've talked about how assets are divided. What happens with liabilities?
With the liabilities on the IRS?
Let's say they have tax debts or liabilities or other liabilities. Just curious to point as to how liabilities are split. Is it similar to how assets are split?
Yeah, it is, because most of the time the couple was married and that someone failed to pay. So usually you know, both of them are going to be on the hook, and they can come after, you know, both spouses. But the problem is, you know, if you have a spouse where, you know, they make significantly less, then the spouse who makes the most money is going to be the one who's going to be holding the IRS debt because they have the ability to earn more money and be able to pay. I mean, some people try to bring in I think it's the innocent spouse. You know, I didn't know that, you know, the taxes weren't filed, but all that would go through, you know, the CPS and, I mean, CPA to make sure that, that would even be an option.
Mm-hmm.
But the deduction though is for the dependency runs about, I know the one in 2014 was $3,950. So, you know, that can be a pretty big chunk of change if you make less than the other spouse. And so sometimes too, when you have a spouse who makes a lot more, so say you have a doctor who's married to, you know, a stay-at-home mom, well, the stay-at-home mom's really going to want that dependency exemption, where the doctor, I mean, it's not, he won't even get there. You know, the $3,950 is not even going to help them out because their pay is so high. So, you know, it is important to take into account when you're mediating cases, or if you unfortunately have to go to final trial on these kind of issues, that, you know, that's something that you would take into account for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, after things are all wrapped up and we've divided figured out the value of our assets and liabilities, divided things, taken all the income and tax issues into understanding, and we come to a final area where we are now divorced and on our way, updating the will and estate planning documents and insurance policies, something that people might gloss over and forget, but you're going to tell us why they should pay close attention.
Yeah, I mean, that is a big kicker is I always do that too in my closure letter to my clients. You know, here's all your original documents. You know, make sure you update your will, change your beneficiaries. Don't leave your, you know, ex-wife on there because, you know, what happens is so if one of the spouses dies and you still have your ex-wife on there, well, you know, you're going to probably be setting yourself up for a possible will contest because, you know, you haven't updated your estate planning. So also, you know, with medical power of attorneys, you know, and they start calling your ex-wife, hey, should I, you know, he's sick or something's happening. Well, that's not going to be the person you really want, you know, to have the power of attorney. So you really need to make sure to update those issues and also with the children as well, you know, to make sure that all those documents are updated and you talk to your financial planner and then your HR department to make sure that, you know, you have changed your life insurance beneficiary and not left it as, you know, your ex-wife. And you can put it in your children's name. It shouldn't be a problem. But you just have to, you know, because you have to understand too, if it's a spouse that has to pay child support, life insurance policies can be taken out, and I always ask for that too, in case something happens to the spouse, that the kids would get, you know, that money, that benefit, because you know, the spouse, you know, their dad or mom's not going to be around to take care of them anymore. So the life insurance will help out a lot.
So, but sort of backing the child support obligations,
Yeah.
and what, and also maybe as well as maintenance and alimony.
Well, really for
So,
alimony, spouse support.
well, and I want and just wonder, you know, because we always run over some of these presumptions in case law. Are there any presumptions in Texas law that you have seen that speak to what happens if people completely fail to update any of these estate planning documents, or are there no assumptions? And
The assumptions, yeah. What assumptions we have?
yeah, are there any assumptions if someone doesn't, let's say if someone gets divorced but they haven't done any of the changes there in their estate planning, do they have a leg to stand on? How do they fight that?
Well, that's the problem is the will flat out says, you know, hey, your ex-wife is on there and they're going to be the executor of your estate. So that's a problem because what if you're remarried? And you know, you have some stepkids. Well, they weren't even in the will. So you're looking at, you know, a possible will contest costing, you know, your estate a lot of money and heartache where people are supposed to be grieving your loss, but then instead they're dealing with the probate court and taxes and you know what I mean? And that's just some place that you definitely do not want to be, especially if I have a case right now where you, I have an incapacitated husband, but we, you know, he can't get divorced because technically he's incapacitated and the wife is just kind of sitting there and she can't do anything with any of her, with her house or bank accounts because everything's frozen until you figure out whether or not, you know, the spouse is truly incapacitated and it can take, you know, 6 to 9 months. The probate court is so overwhelmed in all the counties that it moved. You thought the family law cases moved slow. Try probate court, you know?
Right. Well, it's I've been involved in contested probate litigation, and you want to talk about things really going slow. Oh my goodness, when there's no emergency at hand. Well, and that's another thing of thinking about estate planning. If you have a health care power of attorney that still appoints your ex-spouse as the one who can make decisions over whether to pull the plug or not, that could be a problem. Yep. Things that people don't think about. Well, Leslie, I'm glad that you're there to think about all those things and let clients know that, you know, it all wraps up. You know, one of the things that I do like about your practice is, you know, from criminal law to family law, juvenile and probate, Barrow's firm can pretty much cover just about anything that happens to Texas families. And if it's in the world of business, Leslie will make a good referral, right? Right,
for
there
sure.
You go.
We always have clients that were willing to help.
All right, excellent. Well, before we go, can you let the folks at home, anyone who wants to continue a dialogue and learn more, how they can best get a hold of you?
Sure, you can call our number at 817-481-1583, and we are available 24/7. If you leave a message, we can call you back. You'll have to give us some time, of course, if you are calling late at night, but we will return your call the next day. And our number is 817-481-1583, and email is lbarrows@barrowsfirm.com. If you have any questions, give us a call. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Leslie. I appreciate your time. I also appreciate the time of anybody who listens to these podcasts and shares them on social media pages, finding the blog and clicking the like button on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+. It's helpful because we never know which of our friends out there is thinking of divorce or wants to figure out questions about financial or assets. Sometimes people go and hire a lawyer and talk to them and get it all squared away before they even have decided to file. So it's important to share this information. It's helpful because the more people know, the better they can be good clients, and the lawyers are happy, and everyone has a good day. All right. So until then, we hope for better weather here in Texas. And anyone who needs anything, call the Barrows Law Firm, 817-481-1583. Thank you again, Leslie, and all of our listeners. We will talk to you all soon.
Okay. Thanks, Nick.
Bye.
Get a boat.
Yeah, exactly.